Hey, everybody, this is Glenn Hausman, host of the No Vacancy Podcast and your hospitality friend. Thanks for tuning in to my episode of the Smack Podcast.
I'm Florian Montag, and I'm thrilled to have the incredible Glenn Hausman joining me on the show today. Glenn is the founder and host of the No Vacancy Podcast, one of the first hospitality-focused podcasts to gain global recognition. It was such a fun and insightful conversation. Listen in and enjoy the show. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to the Smack Hospitality Podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Flo. Great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. I don't get to talk to my friends in Europe enough.
Yeah, it's amazing to work together for once. You're a podcaster, we're a podcast format, both focusing on a hospitality industry, but across the pond, you look more on the US stories and trends and all of that, and us more on the Europe side. So it's really nice to have you on the show. Maybe to jump right in, it's the beginning of the year. How did your year start until now?
How did my year start off? Woo! Man, I shut down at the end of the year for my my annual break because, I'm out there. I travel 150 nights per year. It's pretty exhausting talking to all those people. I love it, but I'm an introvert and need some time to kind of recover every single year. Then I was blessed enough to have a speaking gig to start the year off, and I've already been going at it. I've already stayed. As we're recording this, it's the middle of January. I've already stayed in 4 hotels this year already. So we're off to a good start, and I'm excited to see where the hotel business here in North America is going to be headed in 2025.
Wonderful. I mean, you're beating me. I'm only at 3 hotel stays until now, but amazing. So quick two-liner, what's your outlook for 2025 for the hotel industry? Are we in a booming market? Are we in a struggling market? How do you see it?
Maybe we're in a boo kind of a market. We'll kind of see. Here in North America, and just so everybody knows, all of my comments will be coming from a perspective on my side of the universe. So if I say something that doesn't make sense in your particular country, that's why. I think here in the United States, in Canada and Caribbean, for example, we're really seeing a story of guests are not going to want to pay any more. They've had it. They're maxed out. They're spending more in every other part of their life as well. So hoteliers have to figure out how to keep those expenses that are also continuing to rise under control while somehow figuring out a way to find a profitable future.
I mean, I think this is something which is definitely also relevant in Europe and all about a lot of different countries around the globe. But We see the same here on this side, and it's definitely something where in my second part of my career or my job is with technology. Tech plays a huge role, and we'll see a lot of different trends here as well in that space to support that. But Glenn, let's take a step back and look at who you are as a person. I mean, you're definitely the number one podcaster in the hospitality space on all different kind of rankings. And it's always, I had the pleasure to listen to one of your keynotes as well at High Tech last year. So it's really nice to have you on our show. But what's your background? Where are you from? How come you're in the hospitality space making podcasts? Are you like a podcaster? Are you a hospitality pro? What's your profession from back in the day?
I am a hippie jam band guy wannabe masquerading as a professional. That is officially who I am. I've always loved going out and traveling and exploring and having new experiences. And when I was able to move my life in this direction, everything sort of clicked. I started off early in my career as a music and entertainment writer. I lived on Long Island, New York. Back then, I was living in Manhattan and Brooklyn. So I was very connected to music and celebrities. I worked in, I ran a hip-hop video editorial company back in the 1990s while I was simultaneously trying to build my hospitality career. So I've always found hotels exciting. Celebrities, not so much, but I'd interview them in amazing hotels. Plus, I think about those road trips I took as a kid, and the most exciting moment for me was getting to that hotel and getting to the door, putting the key in the door, turning the key and opening it up And that to me is where the adventure began. And I will tell you, Flo, I still have that feeling today every single time I check into a hotel. So I was working full time at a hotel, media company, and I decided it was time to chase my own destiny, to leverage what I saw coming. And 9 years ago, I started becoming a professional podcaster, speaker, consultant, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you know how many hotel rooms you've stayed in approximately in your career?
I don't, bro, but I keep as many of my room keys as I can.
So you have your own room just for that?
Yeah, like I know we're audio only, but I got multiple piles that if I stack them up are several feet high, probably. So I've been staying in so many hotels, but so have you. I mean, so it's really great for all of us to really get out there and have that tactile experience in hotels, which I think really helps drive some of our understanding and perspective. And one of the things I love, Flo, is that I'm not a hotel owner and operator. I'm in the mix as a commentator, but as a guest. So sometimes I see things that others don't, which is exciting because they're looking at it through their prism. And I also talk to people in all the different disciplines in our great business, which are typically siloed. So I'm able to bring things across different channels to kind of come to a conclusion that I hope will educate and empower hoteliers to be more successful.
So you're saying the hotel room is the wonderland of Glenn Houseman. What are your like top three room attributes or something you're looking for when you go into and open that door to the next adventure? Is there anything which you like always look for?
All right. So generally speaking, I'll go with the hotel line, clean, comfortable room. At the end of the day, that is what matters most. I need a good bed. I need the pillows that work for me. And I just want a bathroom that works really well. The best hotel experience, for the most part, unfortunately, is one that I don't really remember a few months later, right? Because if you have a bad experience, you're more likely to remember it. But when I'm in 150 nights on the road on the year, I don't remember a lot of them specifically. The ones I do remember, though, are really going above and beyond and creating an experience through human beings that are great. Now, Flo, if you're asking me some of the things that I really like about a hotel room, I'm a sucker for a balcony. That is my number one thing I love more than anything.
Any particular reason for that?
I love the outdoors. I just love being able to sit outside and just kind of hang out at the night. Or if I have 30 minutes off of a conference and I need to refresh. I'm not a big fan of these hotel rooms that are sealed all the time. I mean, I understand why they are, to save on the expenses of construction and ongoing operations, but I really prefer it when I can have that outdoor space.
So would you be a fan of attribute-based selling at the end that you can have in your booking experience, always book your balcony, for example, on top? Is that something which you see the hospitality world to go into?
Well, they're already trying that. They're already trying it. But I'm finding that they're really not approaching it from an angle that gets me excited. It seems to be strictly dollars and cents. Upgrade to this for X amount of dollars, but it's not really telling me what the experience is. I actually upgraded to a balcony at a casino resort I just visited in Lake Tahoe. And that's because it was only $20. But if it was like $100, I'd probably go, no. So you have to kind of connect with me in a more emotional way instead of just telling me what the price is. I think if it's just the price, then you're really not setting yourself up for success in making that sale, because nobody's looking at it with a sense of positive emotion behind it and how it can enhance the experience.
I think that's what a lot of what you say, right? It's the selling attributes and not experiences. It's the storytelling, the whole marketing behind it is not there. And I think we see the challenge often then in upselling, and a lot is just about, okay, do you want to pay these extra bucks or not? But going away from the experience and the storytelling, you do that a lot with the hotels you work for, right? So how do you see the level of storytelling in the industry? And is there enough expertise there with a lot of hotels you work on building these stories and bringing experiences to life? Or do you think the general industry can still learn a lot?
The general industry can certainly still learn a lot, although there are great people out there that are telling stories through their property and the amenities and services that property offers. A lot of them out there. So it's a top tier of great hoteliers that I interview on No Vacancy all the time that tell us what that story is. When they're originally designing a property or reinventing a property, they try to attribute a story to it. Now, there's different types of hotels. So your traditional select service hotel in the United States, there are not really many stories to it. They try to tell you that there's stories to it, but X brand that has 1,000 units throughout the country that it can only do so much, right? So in that case, it's really about the value proposition. And maybe they're going to claim they're making it of the neighborhood. They'll have a mural. They might, you know, they might have something in their gift shop that has local cuisine, but they're not really creating that fundamental experience. Hoteliers in the boutique realm, full service hotels, a lot of times, they have much more opportunity to be able to have different elements from which they can draw on to tell a more in-depth story that will connect better emotionally with customers and get them to spend more money.
I think that's definitely also looking at a lot of these, you know, big chains, multi-brands, not very easy to differentiate. Is there any brand where you say, especially from a US lens, which brings storytelling to the next level, where you're just amazed every time from the first booking experience to the on-site, yeah, look and feel, the store, the people? Is there anybody who is kind of the master of experiences or master of storytelling?
All right. So none of the major brands are, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Their game is to, you know, they're basically marketing organizations at this point because of an asset light strategy. So they're really just trying to get as many people in as possible. Plus, when you set that against the backdrop of select service hotels, for the most part, that's kind of where it gets a little tough. So the smaller independent companies are doing a great job. Hilton just did a deal last year with Graduate, for example, Graduate Hotels. Great brand that has a very definitive point of view. And I think Hilton went ahead and purchased that brand because they were able to accomplish what we're discussing right now. Getting better connected with the audience, having that real distinct point of view that leads people to know what you are all about and gives them the ability to feel a little bit more closely connected to a brand, to the Graduate Hotels, than your general fungible brand that's kind of like every other brand that's out there. I also love my friends over at Stay Pineapple. I've been doing a lot of content with Dina Bilan, their president. And what I love about them is they're an ownership group and a management company that wants to have a lot more fun with its guests. So they've got a great point of view. They don't take themselves too seriously. They don't script out what their employees have to say. And they really want people to be who they are. In fact, they don't even have like a dress code, right? So you're not going to get somebody in the boring slacks and the polo t-shirt at this, right? So they can be individuals. And to me, the future is hospitality, about human beings connecting with human beings much more than the basic amenity and services in a hotel, which, I'll be honest with you, here in my part of the world, almost every hotelier does absolutely phenomenal with.
So you would say with the Stay Pineapple example as well, it doesn't have to be all uber luxury or super specific in segment to be able to have a great story and experience, but it's just about the DNA behind, and it needs to go on hiring, yeah, on who the people are. And it's a top-down and bottom-up approach at the same time.
Yeah, man, you totally nail it, Flo.
So when looking at maybe, you know, like the industry, we look into the new year, talking about talents and hiring and people, we hear about, you know, all of the big trends, why AI is going to change everything, and, you know, technology is technology. But we have a lot of listeners who are young people from hotel schools and wanting to get in the industry. You're a veteran from outside. What would be your take on, you know, if you're a new player or a new person coming into the industry as a young talent, what would be your piece of advice of how to stand out in the job market, and or what to look for, as well as a kind of a brand you would want to work for?
Right. So I'm all about personal branding, right? Yes, I have the No Vacancy podcast, but people know me and they know who I am and what I deliver, all my personality quirks and all of that kind of stuff, right? So I've spent a lot of time cultivating my personal brand, because that is really important. That is how people get to know you. That is how you're going to get an advancement in your career. However, if you're early on in your career, and I don't mean this with disrespect, you don't know anything because you haven't learned anything yet. You're still new. And I think younger people, I'm not saying your generation, my generation was the same. At a certain age in our lives, we think we know absolutely everything. And that tricks us into thinking that we're actually a better professional than we are. To me, it's really understanding that there's a lot that you don't know that you don't know. And the earliest part of your career must be about learning as much as you possibly can across all different disciplines within hospitality, so you could start to understand the bigger picture and where that could lead you in your career.
Pulling up the sleeves and do the work is definitely something which is super important. I see that. And I'm a person quite young. I also thought that I knew better, or I already knew something. That's why I started a startup right out of hotel school. But I think, as you say, if you do that, it always has to be combined with just putting in the hours and at least doing all you can to make sure that your assumptions, which you have as a young person or the new view, is actually fits to the real world and can, it's not just nice on paper, but actually also helps the people who today work in the industry and have done a certain thing in a certain way for a good reason.
Yeah, and I will say it's also important for young people to realize that different generations see things very differently. You young people out there are what we call digital natives, right? You've grown up with an iPad in your lap and you understand how things work and you see the world because of that in a very different way. I and my Gen X group are digital natives. We grew up in a universe before the internet. So we look at things very differently. And it's important to be cognizant of that difference because I grew up in my formative years informed about the universe in a very different way than younger people like you, for example, Flo, have grown up, right? So that's an important understanding, I think, to have. And for me, I look at younger people as being much more connected to technology than I am. I have to force myself to learn stuff. I have to get past leaving that new piece of tech on my desk for a while before I get to it, where y'all just kind of have an inherent understanding of how things work, at least from my opinion.
Then you have to force yourself quite a lot, as you're doing quite a lot of things quite well in the digital space. And I think, as you said, like, we'll talk about No Vacancy a bit more in detail as well, but Glenn Hausman as a brand, you mentioned it, you've built out your personal brand, but like, what is your secret sauce between building a personal brand, being out there, which people want to hear from and click on and interact with and engage, versus a personal brand where it's just like, oh no, that person again, you know, kind of the person, keep it for themselves. What's your secret sauce of doing that for so long and being just relevant on that level?
All right, I'll say in three words: authenticity, passion, and curiosity. Those, I think, are three important elements to success. And I'm glad we're recording this because I've never actually put it that way before. And I don't want to forget this because I've learned, number one, with authenticity, the more I allowed myself to be who I fundamentally am, I started to connect better with people, both through the content that I create and me being out there at conferences, mixing it up with people. So it's so super important to find a pathway that allows you to express who you are as an individual, right? I also said passion. You've got to absolutely love everything that you do. My partner that I do a lot of podcasts with, Anthony, says, passion means everything. And he's right about that. Because if you don't have the passion, you're not going to go that extra mile. You're not going to push it. And that combines with curiosity. If you are not interested in the entire universe of happenings around us, then you're not going to learn to ask the right questions. You're going to get bored. And all of that is going to translate to your audience who may not realize it consciously, but they certainly will unconsciously, and they'll go to other content creators to get their needs.
Yeah, I mean, these are definitely deep attributes, which is, I think, also difficult to keep and maintain, right? It's mm-hmm. because, of course, you're passionate and curious and authentic, but at the same time, a lot is about being rigorous at the same time and staying up to date and always having that, as you guys with no vacancy, you're publishing content all the time on top of it, right? So I think, as you mentioned, like these fundamental parts is, is super important to have that. But then it's also staying relevant and expecting. What's your kind of like your own rules, which you have? Do you have any like certain amount of podcasts you have to do for yourself or posts online? Or is there anything where you say that's my monthly expectation to yourself?
Yeah, I really put out a lot of content. I do. When I'm in New York in my home, like I am this week, I do 3 live no vacancy shows per week. Plus, every Friday night, with rare exception, we do, no matter where I am in the country, we do a show called Friday Night Audit. It's at 5 o'clock p.m. New York time. And that's a comedy happy hour show where we bring on people within the hospitality industry and show what they are like as human beings when you're hanging out with them, as opposed to saying, "Hi, how are you? I'm at a conference." You know, that sort of a thing. When I'm on the road, I do a lot of short form content. So the no vacancy shows are half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. Great for your commute. Really gets you more in-depth stories. But I'll be at the Alice conference, should it be taking place in a couple of weeks from when I'm recording this in LA. I'll probably do 15 to 20 5-minute videos, for example. And then I'll run those over the next couple of weeks. Some that are very in the moment, let's what's happening now. Others more evergreen. So I could run it in 2 or 3 weeks and it won't seem stale. So I'm always trying to get as much content as possible. And sometimes I got to tell you guys, if you're interested in doing this, you're going to feel like you're on a treadmill. You're going to feel exhausted all the time. And I totally understand why the major YouTubers out there all wind up quitting after a while, because deadlines are rough. Fortunately, I grew up on the print side before the internet was invented, and I learned how to hit deadlines as a journalist day after day after day after day. Doesn't make it any easier, but it is reality.
So especially your journalistic background, as you say, it's not just about asking the right questions, knowing how to get people engaged and tell the stories, but it's as well of just that rigor of bringing out content, because I see that as well with us. I mean, we love doing the Smack Show and we all have a second work life on the side. Yeah. So it's always a challenge of making sure that people can expect content from you and that you have great content at the right time when people deliver it, because you need to also support kind of that expectation from the listeners and not just do like one podcast 1 week and then be quiet for a month and then do like 3 in a row. Always kind of making sure that people know what to expect.
Yeah, and I've kind of fallen off of that a little bit because I have the 3 live shows a week when at home and then all the other content. But the point is, I'm always putting out new content constantly. So I'm always hoping to be top of mind with the hospitality community.
You mentioned journalism as well and print to media, print to digital. It's an industry which was very much disrupted. It's not a dead industry. It has evolved and both are still living, but in a very different context. And now with AI coming into the market, you know, there's a lot of things where we all expect it's going to be like full disruption. But I think there's enough people, and I'm sure you share the view of talking about hospitality and how hospitality is changed by AI and what can happen and what not. But podcast is as well something which has the potential, right, to be disrupted by AI. There's some first examples with Google having their notebook LM kind of creating kind of AI-driven podcasts. How do you see podcasts evolving with that new trend? And do you see it as a more as a gimmick or do you see it impacting the world of podcasts in the near future?
I mean, AI will impact podcasting in the future, but not from a content creation point of view. Yeah, maybe it'll help you get some points, but if you don't have a good, vibrant human being who you can sense their soul on the other end, then I don't think you're going to really be able to make emotional connections with an audience that are going to keep them coming back. Man, my dream would if I could just have an AIG and then I could go, relax on a beach somewhere where my AI does all of the shows for me. But I don't think that's realistic. I use AI to help with getting transcripts, with helping create show descriptions, and that sort of a thing. But I would never use it to get between me, my guest, and my curiosity.
So what do you think is the biggest trend in, is there a biggest trend in podcasting for this year? Is there any kind of evolving or something which you plan for yourself of to change your show or make your show evolve?
I'm always trying to look and evolve. And the reason why I started doing a lot more short form content is because I think that people want to digest it in that way. I think the future of podcasting overall is you got to approach it on multiple fronts. We're all people with different needs, different desires at different times, right? So my No Vacancy proper show, No Vacancy Live, is that longer form conversation where you could really get more into some of the issues and learn. Whereas my No Vacancy News Today products, the ones that I record when I'm on the road with conferences, is capturing little bit moments, what's happening in the hospitality zeitgeist at the time, or maybe a single piece of advice or information that you could leverage in your business as well. And then I'm doing like the short videos, right? You know, the 30-second, 1-minute type of things. They have their place too. So I think going in the future, it's really a mix of content that appeals to all of the different places that people want to interact with content throughout their lives.
Is there, for No Vacancy Live, is that that's your number one show, right? And everything from that is supporting that. When you started No Vacancy, I mean, you mentioned, yeah, you love hotels, but what was your vision behind it, starting that show and looking back at it? How has that evolved compared to your initial vision, what you dreamt of?
So 12 or 13 years ago, I started really getting into podcasts, right? I was like the first wave of podcasters that came out. I absolutely loved it. And I'm like, a podcast is a fun, different way to connect with people. And I'm not talking the audience. I'm talking strictly the people I would be interviewing in this case. And I was working for another publication. I'm like, hey, maybe we could try this. Let's move the technology forward, because I was working for the first online publication in the United States that was focused on hotels. So I'm like, how can we take that a little bit further? And I started a show and I did 100 episodes of that. And I learned how to do podcasting and I got really excited by it. And I also learned that the people I was interviewing loved it as well, because it was different. It was fun. It allowed them to express who they were as a person. So that was one component. At the same time, I started to see shifts in how the internet was being used and how marketers were starting to leverage the internet. And I saw a distinct opportunity out there with the birth of content marketing occurring around the same time. And I'm like, I think that this is going to be a future, right? So about 10 years ago, I said, I've got to start this. I've got to go out on my own and I've got to make a big change in my life. And I spent a full year planning and strategizing on how to make that happen. I wasn't just going to quit one day and go off on my own. After all, I had kids, I had a mortgage, and it was a big gamble. Plus, being a Jewish guy from Long Island, I not only had to convince my wife it was a good idea, but I had to convince my mom it was a good idea too. So that took some time, right? Because they're like,
definitely at the time, who wanted somebody to go into podcasts, right? It's like, okay.
Yeah, think about it. You know, think about it from their point of view. I got this good job. We had actually only moved to Long Island a year prior for an advancement in the job that I was having. And now here I am coming with this cuckoo crazy idea that they don't have any context in. For me, it was the most natural thing for me to want to do. But to pull in all the other stakeholders in the Hausman family was a challenge. And it took a little while to get them to buy on. And it took a little while to get potential people to support me to buy on. So it took me about a year to figure out how to do that. And then 9 years ago on New Year's Day, I said, I am out of here. And I started my own business. And I've been focusing on it ever since, doing a great mix of podcasting, content marketing, like I said, consulting with companies, creating content for companies. And of course, my actual love is getting on stage and being able to deliver keynote speeches, moderate panels, or be a fun host.
But let's be honest as well, right? It's like you took that year, you strategized, you started off with a new format, which was way too early for the industry in that sense. I'm sure the numbers were not That's amazing. Like, how was it, let's say, like 9-12 months in, where, you know, the numbers were like most likely, I'm wrong, but most likely not yet there where you would want them.
No, you're not wrong at all. Because not only was I, having to put out a new show and get attention, they're like, what's a podcast still back then, right? Now we all know what that is, but it was a confusing time. My first episode of No Vacancy, and we just did, as we're recording this, episode 921. My first episode was 13 listeners. And let me tell you, I asked a lot more than 13 people to listen to it. So
you had your wife, you had your mom in there.
Right, seriously. So even the people that were closest to me didn't give an F, right? So why should the rest of the world care? I just kept at it. I was getting a lot of positive feedback from the people that were on the show, again, because it was new, it was different, just like with the previous 100 episodes I had done. And it was a really great way to start to differentiate myself as a brand and to find a way to actually compete against all of my friends that were still at traditional hotel publications. So, you know, it is what it is. You just got to keep going. You just got to keep going for it. But Flo, my show really didn't take off until just before the pandemic. And in January of 2020, I was at an event. I was at Wynn Resort. And it was a major hotel company. And I was sitting at a slot machine going, oh, I finally feel comfortable after 5 years. I feel like I could take a deep breath. And then boop, 2 months later, I lost absolutely everything. But everyone did. So I'm not saying that feel sorry for Glenn. I'm saying it as that actually turned out the worst thing that could possibly have happened to me individually. Losing pretty much my whole career, all my speaking gigs went away, all my advertising went away, everything went away, was all of a sudden I started going live every day. And it really transformed who I was as a communicator and my entire career. Because during that time, everybody really tuned into what we were doing. And I was able to hone my skills and hopefully have been a beacon of light for people during that time. And I'll tell you, the universe has been blessing me ever since.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's a blessing in disguise, and these kind of big shocks have a silver lining. And I think with the digital space, for sure, looking at it now, a couple of years back, it definitely was a catalyst for tech and new formats.
Yeah. It also prevented me, Flo, from resting on my laurels and being lazy. There's a thing in life where we are comfortable, and that's good, but then we get too comfortable. And we're not challenging ourselves enough to grow both in our skill sets and as emotionally as human beings. So that was a really good signal to me that I needed to make changes. And I try to remember that all the time and constantly try to adapt and adjust and make changes when I can, or at least I hope I can, because I'm like everybody else. I'm tired, I'm lazy, and I just want to be left alone. You know,
you're a great showman. If you're such a, you know, introvert and prefer to have a relaxed time, you definitely are able to motivate yourself. We're getting to close to time, and you know, it was super interesting to learn from you and what, you know, your stories from the past and starting off No Vacancy. Looking 10 years down the line, where's No Vacancy at that stage? Is it going to be Do you have any kind of forward vision of that?
I don't necessarily have a forward vision of the podcast journey itself, but I'm always thinking ahead to that next part of my career. And in answer to your go forward question, let me just go back for one moment. One of the other reasons why I decided to start the business that I had is I was in my early to mid 40s at that time. And I kept seeing older human beings in their early to mid 50s get laid off by their companies. And they'd come to one event and they'd be like, I'm a consultant. And then they'd disappear. That scared the F out of me, right? So that is an important motivating factor that you, and in that case, I meant me, needed to control your own destiny. And that was paramount to everything. So now looking forward, I'm still continuing to do that. And I have to be keenly aware that I can only be the number one podcast for so long, right? Younger people will take over. That's just the nature of the universe. So how can I make sure that I don't sit on the sidelines and allow the universe to pass me by? I have to think about new ways to develop my career. One of the things that I've been trying hard to do is get on boards, get, you know, more on advisory positions, and try to figure out how to get involved in a lot of companies behind the scenes. Because in order to have a full, vibrant career, you can't just trust one area of income. I've had to create all sorts of different opportunities, so some lever is always being pulled that'll keep me happy and my family fed all the time. So I'm always reorganizing, rejiggering, and thinking of how it's going to go. The speaking gigs aren't going as well. Then I need to really, then hopefully the advertising in my newsletter and on the shows that I do are going better, right? So I'm always trying to figure out, you know, different things in order to make it work. And I'm a big believer in always constantly adding one more thing to your life, right? Whatever your skill is, you've got to pick up new skills. Don't think about it as giant projects. Just do one more little thing, incorporate that into your life, make it normalized, then go ahead and take on another challenge and incorporate that into your life.
Is there a specific new thing you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the next wave of technology and how to leverage it while also trying to actively become more engaged with different companies on the advisory board level. In the last couple of months, I started working with three clients like that. A lot of them are just for, like, you know, points if they go public and all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, listening to advice, some of my friends that have gone down that category, if I could like work with 10 or 12 companies and one or two hit big, then that might help my retirement. Because I will tell you guys, journalism did not pay well. So I never had the opportunity to buy Google back in 2008. So I'm like working really hard to, you know, to figure out what my future is going to be.
Glenn, it was a real pleasure to have you on the show and have your experiencing your true passion of authenticity and curiosity, which you definitely displayed today. And thank you so much for sharing all of the insights and being, you know, a real entrepreneur of the journalistic industry in hospitality. It's a real pleasure to have had you on the show. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Hey, thanks, Flo. And let me just say to all of you out there, you can do it. You just have to get outside of your comfort zone and push yourself. If you don't push yourself, you're never going to make that progress. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I hate having to do that, but I do it over and over and over again because that really is the straight line to success. Thanks.
I think we need to start every day with this kind of sentence in the morning, just in front of the mirror. And then every day we know how to get the motivation.
That being said, I just want everybody to know, full disclosure, I wake up every single morning in bed and the first word is fuck, because I don't want to have to deal with another day. So again, just like you guys out there.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.